The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Day five in this crazy World Cup ting, and it's a good day for the Mullers as Thomas grabs a hat-trick and Iran get a World Cup point. Meanwhile, USA, Dempsey and Brooks leave the United States in ecstasy and leave Ghana with postnatal depression. What's coming up in Tuesday's action? Well, there's Belgium-Algeria, Russia-South Korea, and Duarte Claxon Ahoy, Brazil-Mexico. It's all previewed in this World Cup Football Daily. In World Cup Football Daily. Today's starting lineup features James Horncastle. James, just turn and frown and fold your arms across the chest. And Greg Bukowski. Greg turns and faces camera, frowns, gets arms across the chest. Very nice. Wow, that was quite exciting. We just come off, listeners, we just come off that USA Ghana game. What did you think?
Well, it was a stunning finish to what had been a laboured match at times, I suppose you could say.
Looked like the Alamo out there.
Yeah, at the end, it was a wonderful header as well, thumping header at the end to I imagine send the USA into, you know, to wild jubilation.
Yeah,
and also it vindicated Klinsmann's, you know, his whole thing about not having, you know, not taking Landon Donovan because he's a star. He hadn't been particularly playing well, but the focus all seemed on Landon Donovan, and he put the United in states with this team of 11 players who worked very hard for one another throughout and resisted, you know, some a lot of pressure from Ghana in the second half.
When
Prince Boateng came on.
Yeah, absolutely. He put the United in states and got revenge on Ghana, who, as we were talking about yesterday, have ended USA's run at the last two World Cups. Quite possibly the States have done that to Ghana with this because of defeat in this opening game, and with Portugal and Germany to come. Oof.
Yeah, and they showed great spirit there, the US. You think, yeah, they took the lead with that, what, fifth fastest goal in World Cup history.
Yeah, some people are saying sixth. I'm not sure who to believe anymore. I feel like Jonathan Pierce here.
I'm going to go with fifth. It's definitely the fastest at this World Cup.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, after that, the odds looked kind of against the US holding out because Altidore got injured, Besler got injured, and obviously Ghana kept coming more and more into the game and looked more and more like Scott. You thought it was inevitable that they were going to equalise it.
Did I think that?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And they did. So you were vindicated.
Oh, I was right, yeah.
It was like Precinct 13 out there, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was like Fort Apache, the Bronx. But let's take it back to Clint Dempsey's goal. It's a fantastic goal. One of the best goals we've seen, isn't it?
It's pretty shocking defending as well.
I think the defender,
I think it was Boyer. He just got very square, and he was obviously caught cold because
lovely series of touches from Dempsey with both feet.
Yeah,
well,
I don't want to take anything away from him, but I think it did look like a defender there who was like, well, hang on, I didn't expect the game to start this you know, as quickly as this. And I do think Dempsey finished it really well on his left foot and right into the corner. It was a really good goal for the USA to get started with, and gave them a little bit of momentum and a little bit of confidence as well. I actually thought, I was impressed by the USA in the first half, particularly how cool they were on the ball. I thought Michael Bradley in midfield showed some really nice touches, held things together quite well, as did Beckerman, and didn't really let Ghana's midfield get any control in the first half, and not until the second half when they introduced Prince Boateng, and he got between the midfield and defence. Did Ghana, you know, really look like they could cause the USA some problems?
But they'll be kicking themselves after this, Ghana, though, because they had enough possession though in that second half. They had enough dominance to make much more of the game.
They did. They weren't able to make it tell in the final third. I thought their equalising goal was one of the goals of the tournament so far, with that back heel and the outside of the foot finish from Andre Ayew. And they had other chances after that. You just think if they'd been more clinical, if they'd been cooler in front of goal, perhaps they would have been more likely to get the second goal rather than the US. But, I mean, there was a sort of frantic, not headless chicken kind of thing about Ghana's play, but I mean, you could say at some points they played at a really good tempo, and the US didn't really look like they were going to do anything other than hold out for a point. And once that second goal went in, yeah, it just took the wind completely out of their sails.
Yeah.
And how about the reaction on John Anthony Brooks's face? The passion, the drama.
Yeah, that was probably one of the moments of the World Cup so far. Just the complete. I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe what I've just done.
Well, he's not even a regular starter for Hertha Berlin, is he?
No, I mean, I think he made his debut, was it this season? I think he scored on his debut. He came through that system. He was born in Berlin. He's got two tattoos, one on each elbow. One of the place where he was born in Germany, the place where his father was born in Illinois. So, yeah, and as Greg was saying... Yeah,
is that in case he gets lost?
He just points his elbows to...
I thought it might be a street map.
Yeah.
Quite practical.
But, yeah, I mean, his inclusion was to some extent controversial because, obviously, you know, one of the players cut was Landon Donovan. And there were people on Twitter before he scored saying this was probably Landon time. Yeah, this is the time you'd bring on Donovan. But, yeah, as Greg was saying, complete vindication for Jürgen.
A year ago.
And I just thought USA showed brilliantly cool heads. He didn't get a booking all game, I don't think, in the game that became quite frantic. And also, there was times when they were under great pressure where I just thought they dealt with it really well and gave themselves the opportunity by staying in the game at 1-1 to win with a set piece.
Who do they play next?
Portugal, which they'll fancy because Portugal, they've got some injuries now that they've got to deal with. And obviously suspension, Pepe, so it's a very nice time to be playing Portugal.
Yeah, all right, well, let's move on then to Germany's clash with Portugal, which took place earlier on Monday, and a 4-0 win for the Germans with a hat-trick from Thomas Müller, who's now got as many World Cup goals as Maradona has, 8 goals in 7 World Cup appearances. Pretty special. Hey, let's dial up our very own German pal, Mr. Raphael Honigstein, in Rio de Janeiro.
Hello, James. How are you?
Great. I'm ever so well. Hey, how's Rio?
Yeah, it's amazing, actually.
Yeah.
What incredible city, incredible atmosphere, lovely weather.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend it's real work.
Right, indeed not. Now, let's have a little word, if we may, about what was happening in Salvador today, the 4-0 between Germany and these Portuguese fellas. The principal story in the UK has been Thomas Müller, first for his goals and secondly for his falling over before the Pepe incident. Now, we don't really have players play-acting among the England team. So tell me, what's it been like for the Germans to have something like that? What's the reaction been among, say, German media?
There's a suggestion that he'd watched Danny Welbeck during the Italy game, but I don't think that's entirely accurate. I mean, Müller is, of course, what Bavarians would refer to as a Hund, translates as a dog, but really what it means is a sly, clever old dog.
Ah, right.
Whether he was deliberately provoking Pepe into doing his Pepe stuff is not quite certain, but it, of course, didn't help Portugal's case. What I would say is that they were already, I think, in the process of disintegrating by the time Pepe got his marching orders, and that second goal from Müller had already, I think, killed them off pretty much. So they just sort of hastened their own departure from that particular game.
They certainly did. And let's be frank, he did get a hand in the face from Pepe, and there's no telling where that hand had been. So I, for one, say back off, Müller, friends. Now, Rafa, you earlier today put up an article saying 5 reasons why Germany could win the World Cup. Has that number now gone up?
No, I don't think it has. I think Müller's efficiency was one of the things alluded to in among those reasons. But the problem is it's not really up front. The problem for Germany's other areas. Mats Hummels, who went down, I think caused an almighty scare when he had to be substituted. The latest is that it's not so bad, that it was only a kick to his thigh. But if he were to get injured and out of the tournament, then you really are looking at options dwindling rapidly at the back. And there are some positions where Germany can afford injuries. Marco Reus not being there has so far not mattered, but in others there isn't that much depth. And the real worry, I think, will come a little bit later in the tournament. But of course, having a great start, as they have had now throughout the last few tournaments, is a help, because it just eases you into the competition. I think it makes sure that you approach the second game with confidence. You're not under real pressure. You've done already half of the work, because you know 6 points would be enough to get you through. So in that sense, it was a wonderful start.
Yeah, well, you've been quite measured there, Rafa, but as you say, a wonderful start, because this was what looked on paper pre-tournament the toughest game, and you've just won it 4-0.
Yes, and I'm surprised a little bit by the way that Portugal approached this. I thought that Paulo Bento's high line played right into the hands of Germany. They expected a very tight, very narrow game. Portugal defending very deep the way they did the Euro 2012, so they really frustrated Germany, and Germany was very, very lucky to win that game 1-0. As it was, I think Portugal looked like they were only just one proper through ball away from conceding, and of course they conceded through a penalty, but then Germany, with a bit more efficiency, dare I say it, might have scored a few more even. So, yeah, it surprised me a little bit. But it's great, and it's wonderful to see that Thomas Müller, who of course won the Golden Boot 4 years ago, is again in a similar kind of form, just stealing these strange goals from strange angles.
Yeah, indeed he is. Indeed he is. Well, listen, all right, well, that's terrific. You've got Ghana next. What's been your favourite bit so far of your travels there in this Brazilian World Cup, Rafa?
I watched a game next to Tancredi Palmieri.
Ooh.
In a beach bar.
Ah.
Roberto Marvaik was present.
No way.
I don't know how glamorous that is.
Which beach bar was this, if you don't mind me asking?
It was called Sindicato. Almost in Leme.
Yeah.
At the very end, they had... Actually, this is actually nice, but they had really lovely old pictures of Pelé and all sorts of signed shirts that looked very authentic. They had a Maradona shirt from 87 signed on the wall with a Mars ad on it.
No?
That was quite cool.
Wow.
But, yeah, I don't know if there's anything as pod material, really.
Wow, that's pod material right there. Excellent, Rafa. Listen, you hang tough out there, and we'll be catching up with you soon, I hope.
All right, James.
Brilliant. Cheers, Rafa. Lots of love to all.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Até mais.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. No, you hang up. Oh, he's gone.
No, you hang up.
Hey! Cheers, Rafa.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
What did you make of the Germans today, Greg?
I thought they showed really nice variety in the play. They were mixing the play. I think some of the other teams we've seen have been, you know, maybe a bit predictable and they've just had the one idea. I thought Germany played a nice variation in short passing and long passing even before the sending off and stretched Portugal. So they were hard to predict, because they could counter-attack and they could play through the middle as well. The one thing I thought, they looked a little bit vulnerable with the full-backs. I thought Boateng and Hoedes on the other side both struggled, and they could be exposed there, as Ronaldo showed at times. But then that wasn't as much of a problem when the numbers went down.
Portugal, though, disaster for them. And Fabio Coentrão looks like he's out now for the rest of the World Cup?
10 days, apparently.
10 days, yeah, which could be their World Cup, to be fair, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the anguish on Ronaldo's face. I mean, everything seemed to... that could go wrong, did seem to go wrong for him.
He even got a bogey off Yogi.
He did, yeah. As he was coming off at full time, Yogi Love was picking his nose and then used the same hand to shake Ronaldo's. I don't think intentionally, but I thought Paulo Bento, the Portugal coach, got it wrong when they went down to 10 men. You know, he seemed to blame everything on the referee, the penalty. He thought it was soft, which it was.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, Goetze is sort of just is being held on his sort of short shirt sleeve, if you like, and doesn't really...
His arms were all over Goetze from quite a long way before that.
Yeah, I still think it was soft.
All right.
But I mean, he got his tactics wrong when they went down to 10 men. I mean, he played 4-2-3. So Germany completely just dominated the midfield and were able to take Portugal apart. Yeah, I mean, I think for morale's sake, it perhaps would have been better from Bento just to say, let's try and keep this score down, keeping it. We've still got Ronaldo, who, you know, said on the eve of the game that he's only at 100% rather than 110%.
I think
it was of all the stars that have come out to shine in the World Cup so far, you know, be it Neymar, Messi, Pirlo, and that, you know, many people were expecting big things from Ronaldo, and he's probably been, by fault of his team as well, one of the disappointments.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back. I mentioned Fabio Quintanar out. Of course, Pepe's going to be suspended. A great stat here from Opta Joe. From 2002 onwards, Portugal have picked up 6 red cards in 15 World Cup games. That is twice as many as any other side.
Wow.
Wow. We should see them play Honduras in like a prison rules match.
Wow.
That'd be pretty tasty.
That's a great shout, James. Great shout. All right, and do you see them bouncing back, Portugal, from that? Or do you think there's... Because people were worrying about whether they were going to be an almighty flop in this group. And what do you think, Greg?
I can see that being very difficult to come back from now, just with the injuries they've got, and you know the fact that they had to run for a lot longer with 10 men as well. I just think that's quite hard to come back again. Had USA not just got the result they got as well, they might be a little bit easier to face, but their tails will be up. So
no, they will. Mind you, huge game. That opening goal from Clint Dempsey, after that, USA really didn't offer very much at all.
No, but possibly because the goal was scored so early as well. I often think these things set the tone of matches, and you know they scored a goal and another team comes back at you, and that's how it was for a lot of the game until Ghana equalised.
Mario, crucial game coming up then when they face the Portuguese for USA. And meanwhile, I were in Argentina's group while Germany begin their campaign in pretty fine fashion. Argentina, we saw Sunday night with a not especially convincing 2-1 win over Bosnia-Herzegovina. Any comment you want to make about Nigeria-Iran, the middle game on Monday?
They let us down, I think. You know, this World Cup has set a very high standard, and it was the first draw, obviously, for a 0-0 as well. And, yeah, chances were few and far between. Iran, to be fair to them, Carlos Queiroz has said, you know, they're quite limited in what they can and cannot do in this group.
Like swap shirts, apparently.
But like swap shirts, yeah, because they only have so many, and those that they do have shrink.
Yeah, I was reading in Gazetta today. I don't know if this is something that their story was that the regime, or the government, as you might prefer to call it, back in Tehran, doesn't approve overly much of the public. Public support for football, doesn't regard it as an especially ideologically sound a pastime, and as such has denied them the resources that most countries would enjoy. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I did read that in the Gazette. So,
yeah, well, it was also interesting in that, was it Filippo Mariucci's report on that going into the Argentina game, there's tensions, political tensions, because in 1992 there was an Israeli embassy was in Buenos Aires came under attack, and there was linked to the Iranian regime. So you know, like in 1998 with the US-Iran game, that sort of thing is again that sort of undercurrent going into this one.
I think it was a particularly horrific bombing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think many people lost their lives.
So. Yeah, well, a pretty dire game then this afternoon, especially from Nigeria's point of view. 0-0. Probably the best thing actually was this tweet from Noridian Bearded Genius. He says, "A good thing this game is merely a clever ruse by Ben Affleck to smuggle Fulham midfielders out of Iran." nicely done. Anyway, so what that means, Argentina are top, and then you've got Nigeria and Iran, and then Bosnia-Herzegovina, currently bottom of the group, but obviously a long, long way to go. Again, the featured, Greg, one of your specialist subjects today, which is 11 players who have passed through the Premier League without really making much of an impression.
Yeah, the player who was there's a doughty midfielder. He got booked for quite a cynical foul in the second half on Peter Odemwingie. He was Adranik Temorian.
All right.
Are you familiar with his work?
Not at all.
He's at Bolton.
Ah.
Big Sam brought him over to Bolton in 2006. He played a few times for them. Didn't really pull up any trees. I don't think he could dislodge Kevin Nolan, but then not many people can dislodge Kevin Nolan.
That's
from an Allardyce team. Yeah,
from the Allardyce battlegrounds at the Reebok.
Who else was in your 11 then?
There's Gabriel Paletta, who you know very well. Charles Itanje, who was last seen acting up in a Hillsborough memorial and then got shoved out of Anfield. There's a lot of Liverpool players, former Liverpool players actually. Who at this time in the morning, I really should have brought my list up.
If you're interested, go and read.
Yeah.
Greg's excellent piece, which will be up right now on the Guardian website.
It won't be up right now. It'll be up in the morning, though, I believe.
I think most people won't hear this till the morning.
Oh, that's okay.
Producer Ben's off to lunch after that. That could take a while. Good.
You were asking about best represented club sides.
Oh, no, I wasn't, but I'll tell you who was. Russell's paper. Well, you bring me onto post. Go on then. It's Kai Schindelmeier. Jimbo, which club is best represented with starters at the World Cup? Bayern? Chelsea? What's the answer, James?
It's Chelsea were top, but I think joint second, I was quite surprised, was Napoli.
Is that so?
Yeah, with
I am surprised. I'd like to know which nation is best represented at this World Cup, which might sound a stupid question, but I suspect it's actually Brazil.
Yeah, with what, Diego Costa and Thiago Motta,
place,
and,
didn't they?
Do you go back to just their nationality, not the place of birth? Because I reckon Berlin as a city would be pretty high.
Oh, really? Berlin?
Well, no, it just seems there's so many players who were born in Berlin who end up going playing elsewhere, and for Germany in Turkey and
America.
America, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Ghana.
It's interesting, isn't it? All right. What else got tweeted and posted in? Well, actually... Oh, here's Fundament 666. I've been listening since 2006. Well in pod, keep it vintage and that. Hello. Good to hear from you, Fundament 666. For many years, held the record for consistent posting at number one. A lot of people thought he was actually somebody within the pod setup, but I can confirm he wasn't. Passion Sucks is worried about Messi. Messi's decline will be sad to see anyway. I would not like to think it's already started. Has it started?
I think... perhaps those muscle injuries that he suffered towards the end of last season, and then sort of that carried over into this, might have had some sort of effect on his sort of acceleration. You don't see those kind of bursts from Messi that you did.
How old's he now?
27.
Maybe reading too much into that.
Maybe. But then Torres was about that age when he started.
Yeah, but a lot of people always used to say, I think they still say it, he's 27, is at the peak of his career. And I think the peak now is between 24 and 27. Because there's so many miles on the clock that players have, and with so many games to play at the top level. And by that point, I don't know how many games Messi's played, but he's been playing for almost a decade. And
the knocks he's taken as well.
Yeah, over that time. You don't really think he's approaching his peak when he's been playing for so long, even at the age of 27 now.
Fingers crossed anyway. Well, lots of other comments being made in and around the football here. Jonathan Wilson, new theory, the more facial hair, the better the World Cup. His old theory was the fewer teams wearing green, the better the World Cup. Both interesting. It's good to see that Jonathan's still churning out these fresh thoughts and angles. But let's move on then, hey. We should probably mention a couple of bits of news. One is that Ivan Rakitic joining, that's confirmed now, to Barcelona. James, you've seen a bit of him this season, haven't you?
Rakitic. Yeah, I thought he was outstanding in the Sevilla team that won the Europa League. Some have reservations about whether he is an upgrade on Cesc Fabregas or not.
Is that the position he takes?
Well, sort of. I mean, it's kind of hard to decide what Cesc's position was in that Barca team, whether he was playing false nine or sort of in the midfield with Iniesta as an alternative to Iniesta or Xavi. Last night there was quite a story that got a lot of heat in Spain, which was... Higuain to Barcelona, which Napoli then came out and sort of strenuously denied, saying that it was without foundation. But when he went through the mix zone last night, he ignored all the Italian media and spoke to the Catalan media and said, yeah, he'd love to play with Messi, which presumably means he'd love to play with Messi at Argentina. But, they've taken it to mean he'd love to play with him at Barcelona. So
right, well,
I have to see.
Keep an eye on that one. What do you think, Greg, about Ronald Koeman to Southampton?
It seems like a pretty good appointment. He should be able to continue the kind of football they play, but the problem is what players is he going to have left when he gets there? And he's going to... I mean, he's a good name to encourage, like-for-like replacements or at least some kind of high-quality replacements there.
He's Dutch as well, isn't he? Which,
sexy.
It is sexy.
Always helped. Yeah,
I'm not sure if I know quite how his Feyenoord played, but they finished second, didn't they, behind perennial winners Ajax?
Yeah, and maybe he needs to just speak Dutch in all the press conferences and not speak English as well. That seems to be the way to be successful at Southampton.
The Pochettino paradigm.
Yeah, you don't get any pressure then, do you?
Right.
No one understands you.
Good tip there, Greg. Good. Now, on Tuesday, another three games for your delectation. or possibly two, and Russia-South Korea. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair. Belgium-Algeria is the opening game in Belo Horizonte. Belgium, I was reading today that for some people, they came into this tournament, for some bookmakers, they were the fifth favourite. That's an extraordinary idea. I mean, I know they've got this stellar lineup, but still. And they're facing Algeria.
They're in a pretty easy group, which has had a lot of people fancying them, particularly because you think, well, they'll go through easily. But yeah, I wouldn't quite have them as favourites as much as that, because they've played so many games this season. A lot of their players, they've got a very good squad, but it's a quite tight knit squad,
right?
And all the players they've got have been worked hard all season. So I think it's a stretch to think they're going to go to South America and be able to play as well as they did during qualifying for the World Cup.
All right.
I mean, they play early afternoon as well in Belo Horizonte.
Yeah.
But
actually, you know, it might not be that hot there. Yeah.
But I'm interested to see how they get on, because obviously it's a young generation of players.
Right.
It'll be their first major tournament, their first experience of a major tournament. Whether they can handle that pressure, on the flip side, they could go into it with no fear whatsoever. Sort of great opportunity. But yeah, Algeria, I think, is a team that some people might have underestimated. They're the highest ranked African team at the tournament, and considering, I mean, Ghana did okay in stages tonight, but the others, Nigeria and Cameroon, have not really set the World Cup alight, so to speak. And they've got some good youngsters. Algeria, he's sort of Feghouli, who plays for Valencia, and Taida, who plays for Inter. So they could present some problems to Belgium.
Could be an upset in store. Their wing play against the no fullbacks Belgian lineup, because that's their one area of weakness, isn't it? That's what I read anyway today. I'm interested to see how much that comes to pass. But Belgium taking on Algeria. Now, also in that group, Russia taking on South Korea. South Korea. I saw them in one of their. They didn't look very good, actually, in one of their friendlies. They had a pretty disastrous build-up, indeed. Got destroyed by Ghana just before the tournament began, whereas Russia, I think, have been on a bit of a roll, although they are missing their key midfielder, Shurikov.
Yeah, and I looked at Russia's squad today, and he just looked nothing like the Russia of 2008.
Arshavin,
it was so entertaining. And under Fabio Capello, I don't think they're going to set the world alight, really, even if they did have better players than they've currently got.
Mm.
I mean, Russia have got this sort of reputation for being quite, not easy on the eye, let's say, under Capello, unlike in, Euro 2008, when they were quite
sparkled,
great.
Sparkled, didn't they? Yeah. Any of the South Korean side make it into your 11 players who passed through the Premier League without money, etc.?
No.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Yeah. Now, after that, or possibly actually before that game. Yeah, before that game, we'll be on to the first of the second games, if you take my meaning. Because Brazil, who opened up the tournament with their fairly jammy victory over Croatia, will be taking on the exciting Mexicans, who are also fresh from a win in their opening match. To get an idea of how the public viewed the win over Croatia and the atmosphere around the Seleção, let's dial up our chum Fernando Duarte now, somewhere there in Brazil. Fernando!
Jimbo!
How are you doing?
I'm fine, man. I'm just really, really tired. You know, I mean, it's a demanding World Cup in terms of travelling and stage of work, etc. So, yeah, I haven't slept well properly in the last 48 hours. So, whatever I say now might not make any sense.
Right. Okay. Anybody? No, no, we're going to move on. So, listen, you've just flown straight to Fortaleza because Brazil are playing Mexico there Tuesday.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting match we're going to have tomorrow here at the Castellão. It'll pretty much decide the group, in my humble opinion. But the whole expectation for this match, because Mexico, they have been Brazil's bogeyman in the last couple of years. They've beaten Brazil more than any other side, so it would be interesting, although the last year's Confederations Cup, Brazil pretty much dominated the game. We should see what happens now as you might remember, Brazil's opener against Croatia was far from a convincing affair. We kind of like needed a referee at a certain point to settle things.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned the Confederations Cup game, which is at the same stadium, no? And it was a 2-0 win pretty much a year ago for Brazil. But as you say, no team has beaten Brazil in the 21st century as often as Mexico. 6 wins in 2 draws in 12 meetings. Why have they got such a good record against Brazil? And do you see that continuing?
Well, I think the answer for this question is the fact that they have invested in youth academies. They have actually pretty much got things from the Brazilian style. They like the way there's always been this love affair between Brazil and Mexico since the 1970 World Cup. So they try to emulate that, and they got some very good generations. Most of all, they lost the fear. I remember talking to Borghetti, who used to play for Mexico, and they just said these kids, they played Brazil at several levels under 17. Remember, the Mexico won the under 17 World Championship in 2005 by hammering Brazil 3-0 in the final. So they've been losing the fear. What I don't know is that they're going to be able to actually do that again, because we all know Mexico had a pretty bad spell in the last 2 years. Actually, since winning the gold medal match against Brazil in London 2012, they've been on a downside, and they almost missed out on the World Cup.
All right.
You see what happened. Funny thing about the Castelão is this was also the last time Brazil lost a game at home. It was in 2002. It was a celebratory friendly against Paraguay after Brazil won the World Cup. Guess who was the manager? It was Luis Felipe Scolari, whose last game for Brazil.
Wow, interesting. Listen, overall, what's been the reaction to the Croatia game? In terms of the scoreline, it was a good win, but in terms of the performance, as you said, not very convincing. What's been the public mood since that?
Well, listen, if you think that São Paulo used to be such a horrendous place for the Seleção to play, and that during that game they didn't boo the Seleção, that was a massive boost for the players. They know, the players, the supporters know as well, that wasn't a very convincing victory. When Fred's penalty was given away, when the referee saw Fred's penalty, Croatia were actually bossing the game. Brazil was finding very difficult to actually try to penetrate. And the fans pretty much acknowledged that. They said, listen, we needed the referee. People didn't go and condemn Fred, because it's part of the game here. We accept the players try to call referees, but at this time it wasn't something like in other games. It wasn't like in 2002, for example, again with Scolari, Luis on tumble outside the box, and we got a penalty to beat Turkey in another very difficult game. There is a culture that Brazil's first games are always going to be difficult, but this time people are just a bit worried that an own goal after 11 minutes. Things are jittery, so I really hope that by winning against Mexico tomorrow, that everybody calms down. It's important for this tournament that Brazil do well.
What about the players as well, Fernando? Because there's a huge pressure on them, and you could see how much the game meant to them with the anthem and the start of the, as you say, a little bit jittery, the start against Croatia. How do you think the mood's been among the Seleção?
Well, I think that they were relieved after escaping from this first game, especially in the circumstances. Very emotional, going behind with an own goal. So they're relieved, and they're pretty much looking forward to actually settling down. They know they have things to do. They know they have to play better. Nobody hit that, but it was a bit encouraging to see Neymar, for example, not running away from the game. Trying to do things. Oscar, for example, people have been criticizing him during the preparations and even suggesting that Williams should get a starting place, or even Ramirez. And Oscar pretty much, in my opinion, was Brazil's main player, who actually was playing pretty well and scoring that wonderful goal at the end. So I think the players, they're past the first difficult game. However, tomorrow is very important. And a bad result, because a bad result now, after what happened in the Holland and Spain game, might mean a premature encounter with Spain or in the round of 16. Although I really think that Spain are going to go out in the first round. I have this horrendous feeling, sorry for Spain fans, that they might actually be victims of the curse of, past winners going out in the first round. It happened to France, it happened to Italy. It might happen to Spain now, because it was appalling against the Dutch.
No, so it wasn't a very good game, was it? Fernando, listen, one other thing. We've seen a little bit more on social media of the continuing protests and also, of course, where they famously threw rocks against the TV presentation positions of Copacabana. But by and large, mainstream media hasn't been going big since the opening day on the protests around the World Cup. Have they been continuing? Are you expecting anything big tomorrow in Fortaleza?
Well, I don't think so, because first of all, the security apparatus here is absolutely daunting. And I've seen them in Rio as well. I mean, I've never seen so many cops before. But what I've been noticing as well is that it's been fizzling out. Even at the Maracanã yesterday, there were 500 people protesting. Remember that at a certain point last year in the Confederations Cup, we had 1 million people. Mm. I think the impetus has fizzled out a bit. I'm not saying that people are not angry, but you know, but the will of people to actually go out, get out and protest it's cooled down a bit.
Fernando Duarte, it's an interesting game that Mexico, Peralta. I mean, they look good against, who were they playing? Cameroon in the opening game. And it was only a 1-0 win, but if the referees had done their job, they would have won, what, 3-0, do you think?
3-0, yeah.
Because
Giovanni Dos Santos had...
By rights, in fact, they maybe should be on top of the group with Brazil only having drawn.
I mean, they were better than expected. Much had been made of how difficult their qualifying had been, how many coaches they'd been through. They impressed under Herrera. I mean... One of the sort of novelties, I guess, about this World Cup is you've seen a number of teams playing three or five at the back. They were, I think, one of the first we got to see with the Netherlands. Also, Argentina didn't really work out for them. Costa Rica, but Greg was saying it's remarkable to see like Rafael Marquez, you know, still playing at the back for them.
I think he's important for them because Herrera is trying to bring through a lot of these young players. I think he's got 10 who won the gold medal at the Olympics, and. They lack firepower, and that was the whole problem they had in qualifying. I think they drew four or five games at the Aztec and 0-0. So they really, you know, just wasn't happening for them when they were going forwards. And, you know, it's up to him to find balance in the team and find goals from other places. And, you know, hope maybe they can do that. Dos Santos, they've got a lot of nippy little, you know, creative players, but they just think if they had a, you know, physical presence up front, somebody who could actually hold it together a bit more, that might help them. And they haven't got Carlos Vela, of course, because he just won't play for them now. Which is a shame because he's such a good player.
You'll be doing the minute by minute on this, Craig.
I will be, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Are we going to see an upset, do you think?
Possibly. I've got a sense it might be a draw, actually. I wasn't impressed with Brazil in that opening game as well. I thought they looked vulnerable at times. I mean, Olic was mishitting crosses all the time and he was still causing trouble for the Brazilian defence. So if anyone actually plays anything decent into the box, then they could be in trouble.
Hmm?
But yeah, I mean, it could be an interesting game, perhaps 1-0, 2-2-0.
No. All right. Well, that's Tuesday's lineup, and that's it for today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Many thanks to Greg and to James and to producer Ben. And you, listener, do have a super Tuesday. We'll be back right afterwards.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.